I still don't know if we're starting with what I've been watching this week. Or
you know how it goes. Super Betty Bro Jangle is going on underneath this, so you've got to wait a couple of seconds, and then you can tell everybody that what we are doing with this episode is...
What have we been watching this week? Woo!
Very nice. You know, I keep thinking we should cut that song out, and yet... Again and again, I get told by people and emailed that they sing that, you know, when they're brushing their teeth and stuff. So
it gets in your head, man.
We struck a chord. I can't believe that. I just wrote like a stupid little jingle. I wasn't even expecting it to be a song.
Well, as you said in the main episode, you can't decide how people are going to interpret your work.
Oh, okay, we're still on that. Like, there's people who didn't listen to the bonus when all we're talking about.
That'll be an incentive to them to listen.
All right, four films, listeners, two each. Phil, what are your two?
I'm only going to say one because I want to keep there's a second one. Yeah, I'm not sure you're going to like the second one, so okay. I'm going to hold it back. The first one is Curious Case of Benjamin Button.
Benjamin Button.
Benjamin Button.
Good one. And, well, I'm going to do Somewhere by Sofia Coppola, and I'll also do The Last Boy Scout, a 90s action movie starring Bruce Willis.
Ah, okay.
Very different. All right, man, you're up first.
Okay, here we go. Curious Case of Benjamin Button.
My name is Benjamin. Benjamin Button.
How old are you?
7, but I look a lot older.
God bless you. He's 7.
Benjamin, this is my granddaughter Daisy.
Are you sick?
They said I was gonna die soon, but maybe not.
You're odd.
We are almost the same age. We're meeting in the middle.
I was thinking how nothing lasts. What a shame that is.
Some things last.
So this is a film from kind of the late 2000s, I think it is, directed by David Fincher, big fan of his, starring, what's his name? I've forgotten it. Brad Pitt.
Come on.
For a second, I thought his name was David.
David.
David oh, Pitt. Anyway, Brad Pitt is in it. Cate Blanchett is in it. You've got...
Blanchett.
Mm-hmm. I said the French version. And then pretty much that's kind of all the really big names that are in it.
Yeah, I'm amazed that it's David Fincher. Now that you're telling me, I understand, but I can't believe that he made this film.
Right, exactly. He's normally known for his sort of darker films, his sort of more kind of complex narratives.
Yeah, he's normally known for good films, isn't he? Yeah.
Well, let's get on to it first. So this film is based on a short story by F. Scott Fitzgerald. It's about a boy that is born as an old man, and then as he ages, he in fact gets younger, and the kind of intricacies of that causes in his life. It's written by the same guy who did Forrest Gump.
Oh, right, yeah. Well, very similar story.
Yeah, you can see this, it's kind of the same sort of idea. You've got this one kind of extraordinary individual sort of weaving his way through various situations in life and the various characters he meets throughout the film. Tilda Swinton's in it as well.
Oh, yeah, okay.
So this is set just after the First World War is finished. Benjamin Button is born. He's a very creepy old little baby, and it's in New Orleans. And yeah, he starts his life kind of as a freak, expected to die. And yet he gets taken into this old people's home. This film, I remember seeing it in the cinema and I was really disappointed by it. And I thought, oh,
yes.
I was expecting this sort of wonderful tale, which is really interesting events and big sort of scope. And the theme, the idea, which I think is quite an unusual one, but kind of people hear it and they think, oh, that's a good idea. You'd expect it to have some sort of depth and somewhere for it to go somewhere. And this film, it feels like it doesn't really ever go anywhere. It feels like it just meanders through life. And you watch and listen as Brad Pitt narrates his way through these various episodes. And you kind of are left wondering, what's the point of it all?
Mm-hmm,
why is this happening? Is there a theme to this? Is there a point to this? And the special effects are amazing. It's undeniable. You've got Brad Pitt kind of rotoscoped, I think it is, onto sort of other actors. And his face is aged wonderfully. And it kind of shows all the progression of his age. So visually, it's really good. It's very rich. But the story, it feels a bit weightless. And the whole device of somebody turning younger, it doesn't really go anywhere with it. It doesn't seem like it has an impact on the story. The performances are good. Brad Pitt is kind of believable and likable, and he does kind of a nice job. Cate Blanchett, I think, is very good as sort of the love interest of Benjamin, Daisy, this kind of girl who's aging normally, who's trying to pursue a career as a dancer. And sort of, it does chart their relationship quite well. But yeah, I kind of left the film thinking, why was that way? Mm. And I kind of thought I expected more from David Fincher. He's a very talented director. Why has he done all these things?
Yeah, I have to admit, two major problems were, I mean, especially when you compare it with Forrest Gump, is that with Forrest Gump, I remember a lot of the things that Forrest Gump does, the journeys that he gets taken on and the extraordinary events that he witnesses. I can't remember a single thing that Benjamin Button witnesses other than being in the old people's home or wherever he is. And also the way it's directed, I just thought was totally wrong. Forrest Gump wasn't directed with weighty emotion. The emotion came out of Forrest Gump himself, whereas this one, it was just dripping with meaning and yet was completely meaningless.
I mean, I watched this film again, having seen it in the cinema at first, I haven't watched it since, and I think I'd probably give it a B-.
It's so long, isn't it, as well?
It's a very long film. It's kind of 2.5 hours, maybe getting closer to 3. And yeah, like I it was a strange watch again.
I think B- is higher than I would have given it, I have to admit. But there you go.
There you go.
Mm. All right, shall you mind?
Hi, Dad.
Hey, Cleo.
Can decisions shape your life? You'd be aware of 5 above, 7 ways to go to school.
I need you to take Cleo.
You noticed all
when you come back.
I don't know.
7 ways to get ahead, 7 reasons to drop out.
Somewhere is a 2010 film, I think written and directed by Sofia Coppola, starring Stephen Dorff. Do you know who Stephen Dorff is?
I think he was in Blade or something like that.
He was in Blade. Good knowledge, man. He's not a name that I was familiar with, but he has the sort of face where you think, I'm sure I've seen that guy somewhere before.
He pops up. He's had an acting career. It's not like a notable one, but
yeah. But, and he stars in this as a movie star. So it's all set in Hollywood in the Beverly Hills area. And in fact, he is sort of so famous that he's retired to the Chateau Marmont. Do you know what that is?
Where is that?
The Chateau Marmont is a Hollywood hotel famous. It's a 5-star luxury resort, and it's famous for celebrity people who just take up residence there.
What, just live there?
Yeah, and there's almost a kind of what happens at the chateau stays at the chateau thing. Unfortunately, you've had famous people who've overdosed there and that kind of thing. And,
really?
Oh yeah, Heath Ledger was there allegedly in the week before his death as well. And people just kind of, apparently they go there to escape from things. And Sofia Coppola takes us there. She takes us to this place and this weirdly isolated life of this movie star who's so famous he can't really do anything without being spotted. He gets invited to awards ceremonies. But the thing is, he also has an 11-year-old daughter. He's separated from his wife for some reason or another. And at a certain point in the movie, his daughter comes and joins him and he has to look after her for a while.
Played by one of the Fanning girls.
Elle Fanning.
Elle Fanning, yeah.
Yeah, who's now in, that shocker of a fashion horror movie.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
The Neon Demon.
The Neon Demon. I haven't heard about it.
Have you really not even heard of that? Okay, well, I think she's in it now. But in this, she plays his 11-year-old daughter, who's very sprightly and sort of hopeful and full of, the world's massive. What's it got in store for me? And it's really strange because the whole movie feels like a parody of Lost in Translation. So
it's the follow-up one, isn't it, basically?
Kind of. I almost think it's funny because a lot of the commentary I've read, and incidentally, listeners, I'm throwing up here a bit of a paradox because I didn't really like this movie, but I love Lost in Translation so much.
But you're trying to find the reason why this film exists.
Yeah, everything in me is trying to find ways to think this movie's better than it is. But yeah, Lost in Translation follows Bill Murray, who's the sort of washed up movie star doing a big whiskey commercial, and how he gets isolated in Japan. And a younger girl sort of helps him discover stuff about who he is, Scarlett Johansson. This film, very similar. But it's a movie star at the peak of his career, and his young daughter comes and helps him realize stuff about himself. The major problem I have is that Lost in Translation made Tokyo seem like an awesome place to go and visit, and it was kind of like a dream almost, whereas this just makes Hollywood life look awful. I thought, like,
really,
wow.
Barren.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to be there. It's like living in a desert, a social as well as a heat desert, filled with false things and seedy hotels. Like the Chateau Marmont, I think, looks really seedy and not luxury at all. Sofia Coppola's sort of directing instincts are in full force. She allows shots to really take their time and for you to appreciate the oddity of her subjects, as well as sometimes the beauty, but also the sadness, the implicit sadness in a lot of scenarios. That's all there. Like, the film opens with the noise of a car going round and round a racetrack, and every now and again you'll see it buzz past the camera, and that goes on for ages. And then finally the Stephen Dorff guy gets out and he's completely on his own, like just spinning circles, going nowhere. You get the metaphor?
Yeah.
It made me wonder whether, it's a parody. It's a deliberate sort of counterpoint to Lost in Translation. If that's the kind of dreamlike experience, this is the gritty, sad reality of Hollywood isolation. And it just made life look really boring.
Is it sort of Lost in Translation with the romance stripped away?
Yeah, exactly that, yeah. And Elle Fanning is good. And the relationship between Stephen Dorff and Elle Fanning is quite nice. It's quite believable. But it doesn't feel like there's much ground achieved. And there is even another phone call scene. You know, I think I mentioned this in The Picture Perfect. Bill Murray's calls back to his family are some of the best scenes in the film. Because you feel like they chart his emotional journey.
It connects him to something real, doesn't it?
Yeah, whereas this one, the Stephen Dorff guy calls his, I think, ex-wife or ex-partner at one point. And it's the most blatant, obvious bit of dialogue and scene.
Like signposting.
Yeah, that you can get. It had none of the subtlety of the Lost in Translation, so much so that it made me think that maybe was deliberate. And she was saying, look, yeah, exactly as you say, let's take the romance out of this scenario and actually this is what you're left with. And how about this actually being the real life of some of these movie stars?
It's interesting. I mean, I've seen this film and I wasn't a massive fan of it. I think there's one moment in the film which I thought I remembered distinctly and I thought that was quite interesting. Is when he's trying to take a picture with some actress or whatever, and he has to stand on a box because he's too small.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's like, I thought that was just kind of a nice little insight into the reality of Hollywood, is you are too small for the
and
people.
It is quite clever the way that he sort of wanders around and basically these PR people just direct him constantly. Oh, you're going here. And there's a good scene where he goes to collect an award, which actually quite cleverly charts what it might be like to be the person who actually does that. So he's just in his t-shirt in the hotel and he gets a call saying, oh, you're going to go pick up an award. So he gets on a plane, goes there, and then suddenly it's all the glitz, cameras, everything else. He just kind of sleepwalks through it, and then immediately afterwards leaves, and that's it. It goes back to the t-shirt wearing boredom and tedium of the flat, and it definitely puts the lie to some of the glamour of that world, just not very enjoyably, perhaps. The film is going to get a B- from me. It's not very enjoyable, but it does some interesting things. Hit us with your next.
Okay, this is the part where you roll your eyes at me, Laurie.
Okay.
It's The Curious Case of Benjamin Button with director's commentary.
Well, I mean, I left a space there because I was expecting to play a clip for a different film. I can't believe you're doing this. You're right. I'm disappointed.
Well, you are disappointed. But the thing is I feel that this is really noteworthy because I did watch this film having watched Benjamin Button, and I watched it with director's commentary because I heard David Fincher does really good director's commentary, and he really does do really good director's commentary that I wanted to talk
and
about.
This is like a three-hour film that you essentially watch twice.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
And the thing is, you can tell I've got a lot of time to fill at the moment. But yeah, I thought, I didn't watch it all in one go, but I just watched it in installments. And I thought it was fantastic. And it was such an interesting way to watch the film because of David Fincher. It's entirely because of David Fincher. And particularly, I think this film really gives away that it because of the way the film is and the fact that it is kind of meandering through life and showing different parts of life and different settings, it means that the filmmaker can talk about all these different things that you just wouldn't get in one sort of, an action film would only talk about action or whatever. This film talks about special effects. It talks about how you do a submarine or something like that. It talks about how you do a romance in Paris or whatever. It covers so much scope because the film covers so much scope. And David Fincher is just really honest about his filmmaking.
Really?
Really honest about it. And he gives such an insight into Hollywood life. He sort of says frequently, he's like, oh yeah, we just didn't have the money for that bit. And you just think that's so refreshing. Wow. He talks about the fact that there isn't Brad Pitt playing a younger kid in the end of the movie because they ran out of money. They just couldn't afford to do the special effect anymore.
Oh, wow.
So they just got some actor to do it. And they talk about the fact that the kid's up on a roof and how they couldn't get him down. And like they were worried about, oh, is he going to be okay up there? Is he going to fall off? And he's just loving it up there. And the thing is I really enjoyed finding out all the behind the scenes stuff to it. And it gave me such a deeper appreciation for that film because of all the work that went into it.
I notice you're saying appreciation rather than that you like the film better, which I'm glad to hear. Because the film is a film, whether you watch the director's commentary or not, right?
But the thing is as I watch the film, and this is why, again, you're going to roll my eyes. As I watch the film with the director's commentary and I'm hearing him talk about it, it just meant I was playing the film back in my mind again and again and again and again. And I was thinking about it. Why did this film not work so well for me? What is it about? I couldn't work out what it was about. And then suddenly, David Fincher talks about this thing, a particular line in the middle of the movie. It's when Benjamin Button's looking at Daisy. And she's dancing for him, trying to sort of seduce him and enchant him. And he just sort of says, not tonight, Daisy. And then he talks about how there's some days there's some things you regret because you do, there's some things you regret because you don't do. And then the whole idea of regret just started tumbling in my mind.
Oh,
and like, that's what the film's about. Oh. I suddenly felt like this film unlocked to me. And I know you're groaning or whatever, but I really feel like, oh, actually, I have there's something in this film. And the whole point of the film is that the fact that the device doesn't really mean anything. Because how often have you thought, oh, I wish I could relive my younger days because I'd do it so much better. Because if I had the brain that I had, I could live it again. But I'm sure that's a common thought. I've had that thought.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm afraid, Phil, can I pour some scorn on you?
Let me just finish my point and then you can pour it on.
Right.
Because that's what happens. Benjamin Button is old. He's got all the knowledge that he acquires, and then he lives his life of youth. But then it doesn't really make a difference. He's still got these regrets. He's still got these moments which he didn't take. And it's really about these two people, kind of the hurt that they cause each other through life, and the fact that you can't unwind that. The clock doesn't go back for those sort of moments. You just have to continue on and deal with those kind of hurts that you cause each other, and the fact that timings are difficult, and regardless of whether or not something supernatural was happening, you'd still have these challenges in life.
Mm-hmm. The problem is, I've got three things really quick. The problem is the way the film is made doesn't emphasize that message. So for all that, what you're actually reacting to is just the concept of regret, and there are a million other ways to get you to think about that than do a really long, boring film.
Do you want to respond to these as they come?
No, I'm responding to what you've just said.
Yeah, that's fine.
The second thing is that, I think those were two things rumbled into one there, sorry. So the other thing is that communication, we talked about this in our little acting workshop last week. The director and editor's job is to communicate what they need to communicate to the audience. So hearing David Fincher tell you literally what he was trying to do just proves that it's more interesting that they failed to do the job. They failed to get from what they believe they were trying to say to actually saying it. So I think I am annoyed at you because you've also made it interesting, and you've made me think about reassessing Benjamin Button, which I hate because the film needs to do its job. It's what I said about I hate about the Ghostbusters thing when they brought in the YouTube comments into the story. That's unacceptable because you need to let the film do its own job. You can't draw in all this other stuff.
Those are valid things to say, and I get what you're saying, and I can see why you said them, but I disagree that they apply in this case because, one, it wasn't that David Fincher told me this film's about regret. It was that through the course of talking about this movie and the kind of, he just said, I love this moment, and he drew attention to this moment, which I had kind of had skipped me by the first
watching. Exactly, it skipped you by because they couldn't communicate.
No, but I disagree because
there's
plenty of films where basically you don't get it on the first watch. You misunderstand something. You haven't really understood what it's about. Like 500 Days of Summer, I've talked about that film before.
Yeah, yeah.
The first time I thought it was about how awful summer was, and then I realised that it's actually mutual. There's problems with both of those characters in those films, and it's kind of an equally bad thing of expectation reality. There's some films which are growers, like albums. You listen to Radiohead albums, you think, oh, I don't like this song at all. And then you appreciate different parts of it as it emerges. You
know? Very true.
Some things are growers, aren't they? That's the nature of it.
Listeners,
just like Benjamin Button, he grows into his film.
Look at this massive debate that's been sparked, annoyingly, by Phil. What's the grade of the commentary then?
So genuinely, I think the process of watching David Fincher talk about this film and all the insight into filmmaking in general, I thought it's brilliant. Standalone on that regard. I think it's brilliant and worth the watch. I think the film went up probably by like half a grade for me, so it became a B.
Oh,
and I suddenly thought, I like this and I'm interested and I'm thinking about this more. And there's something, I think if you think about it, it is better than you think it is.
Okay, well, he's almost convinced me, however annoying it might be. You ready for my next one?
Yeah, go on then.
All right, okay. My next film is The Last Boy Scout.
This ain't no game, Flash.
Joe Hellenbeck's a private detective who's run out of luck.
If you touch me again, I'll kill you. Told you.
Jimmy Dix is an ex-quarterback who was thrown out of football.
Another tragic tale of wasted youth.
You're nobody.
Shh. Don't tell anyone.
Now.
Son, we're going to a ball game.
They've got one shot.
What am I going to do?
Point at the bad guys and shoot!
To get the goods. On the bad guys.
This once, I would like to hear you scream.
Play some rap music.
The Last Boy Scout is a 90s action movie, and it's following the kind that it's, you know, I've said before, when I reviewed Tomorrow Never Dies, I really loved that film.
Mm-hmm.
And I was kind of getting quite passionate about great 90s action, which is just silly. And it's lots of squibs going off and completely ridiculous machine gunning action sequences. This movie is the bad side of that, I would say.
Right.
So it stars Bruce Willis playing a bitter, grim private investigator who used to be Secret Service, but for reasons that become clear later in the film, is not doing that anymore. He's got a little daughter who doesn't respect him very much. His wife is having an affair with his best mate who gets blown up pretty early on for other reasons. And he meets Damon Wayans eventually, who is a disgraced ex, I think, NFL pro or NBA pro. I'm not totally sure.
What does he play?
I can't remember whether it's basketball. I know, come on. I know that it's not. I can't remember whether it's football or basketball. I think it's football. But I think disgraced for drugs reasons. And the two of them together get mixed up in a series of murders and dodgy dealings that involve corruption and all kinds of nasty business. And they together explore the seedy underbelly, I think, of Chicago is where it's set. So this is written by Shane Black, who did The Nice Guys. Quite early on in his career, I think. And to be honest, the most interesting thing about this movie is the production behind it, because the film feels like a complete tonal mess. You get real sort of gritty, unpleasant violence and ideas, and then you get really odd attempts at humour. And like I said, Bruce Willis is there with his daughter, and you have these weird moments, a bit like you said with The Nice Guys. Yeah. You have these weird moments where it's kind of like comedy about dad being a bit of an idiot. Do you know what I mean? But at the same time, like really brutal scenes, like the bad guy in this film, there is a particular bad guy who meets his end by falling on top of a helicopter, if you can imagine that. Ooh. Yeah, surprisingly graphic in the film as well. Like, it's such a mess. And Bruce Willis is running around like he's in Die Hard, but in forests and in the city rather than at Nakatomi Towers. So it's just awful. The only good thing is Damon Wayans, who actually brings a little bit of levity, and he just convinced me that he could be this guy.
Is he the guy in New Girl?
No, I think that must be another Wayans brother. There's a few of them in the showbiz world. And this is too early for that. Because who's the guy in New Girl?
I can't remember the name. I know it's Wayans. It might be Wayans Jr. or something. They all look very similar.
Yeah, he does. They do look very similar. You can tell there's a family resemblance there. But yeah, he's pretty good in this. But yeah, like I said, it's the production that's most interesting, because I think that is primarily what's responsible for the mess that you see. So it's directed by Tony Scott, who is Ridley Scott's brother, actually. And
right.
If you read a bit about it, it would appear that his direction was basically forced by Bruce Willis and this producer, I can't remember the first name, but a guy, someone Silver, and famously massive egos, huge pressure from the studio, like big star power all coming to bear. Shane Black had to do rewrites. Like, the whole film just got messed around so much. And I think the studios got involved as well, so that it just became an absolute disaster behind the scenes. And I would say very visibly on scene as well, on screen. I think even Bruce Willis and Damon Wayans didn't get on at all. And so their sort of camaraderie, which actually works quite well despite all of that in some places, I think it makes Bruce Willis extra bitter and sarcastic. Like, there's one particular scene where he hides a gun in a children's toy before, you know, being a hero. And that scene has got so much angry humour, and he looks furious, Bruce Willis, in that.
Yeah, really?
I can't tell what they were originally going for, but I've never seen an angrier looking man.
It doesn't surprise me a little bit, because I've heard that Bruce Willis has had that happen before on other buddy cop movies,
really?
And things like that. He's not got on well with directors. He's not got on well with his sort of supporting cast. It seems like he is kind of the movie star, but at the same time, maybe it kind of hit and miss with his buddies.
I mean, especially in the 90s, he really ruled that period. And it's a shame, because I think he's great, isn't he, to watch sometimes.
He's a very talented actor and he's a good performer, but
yeah,
I guess sometimes you just don't get on well with people.
Yeah, interesting. What was that?
Purple.
One final note on this one, which I think is really interesting, we should do a little segment on this if we can, is that there's a note that Stuart Baird, have you heard that name before?
No.
He was an editor who was brought in, basically, he got given this huge range of footage that the studios hated, and they said, please, can you just make a film out of this?
Like a fixer?
Yeah, and he's one of these fixer editors, and he's done it multiple times, I think, as well. And he's responsible, allegedly, for making this even watchable at all. So,
and do you think it is a movie? Does it qualify as a movie?
I thought it was pretty rubbish. I mean, it was completely disjointed. The tone is all over the place. The story makes almost no sense. And there's very little fun to be had. It's just grim and dull and miserable. But it's going to get a C- from me.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's one of the lower ones I've heard you give.
Yeah. Sorry, man. When it's bad, it's bad.
Bit of a bum note to finish with.
Yeah. Sorry about that.
Thanks for that, Laurie. Cheers.
Sorry. Well, you made me all serious after your little director commentary thing.
I thought it was something original.
It was interesting. Darn you. right. So that's the end of what we've been watching this week, listeners. Hope you enjoyed that. Found it interesting. Let us know if you've seen any of those, whether you disagree with our opinions or agree. Plus one's always very, very welcome. Get in touch.
Yeah. Do let us know. superbaileybros@gmail.com or Twitter is @superbaileybros.
And watch out for next week's main episode. Now I'm getting really confused in my chronology, because we're recording all of these in such a short space of time. I might even release this one this coming weekend, which would make next week's episode Star Trek Beyond and the BFG. But if that episode has already been, then next week's episode, we don't know what it's going to be yet, because Phil's away. Helpful?
You're getting me confused now. Is this like wrong? Oh, gosh.
Let's sign off. Let's sign it off. Thanks so much for listening. Bye, listeners. Have a great week.
Bye.